to episode 308 of Late Night Linux, recorded on the 18th of November, 2024. I am Joe, and with me are Phelan.
Tell me why I don't like upgrades.
Graham.
Good evening.
And Will.
Hello.
Yes, we may get to your KDE Neon upgrade later, but first, let's do some news. Mozilla Foundation lays off 30% of staff and drops advocacy division.
Good news, everybody.
Yeah, this is fine.
I think we've seen this coming, right? We've talked about the fact that all of their eggs are in one basket, that basket is looking increasingly leaky, and they must be a little bit short on cash and very, very aware that they're running out quicker than they would like. So this is not really a surprise. It is unfortunate, very unfortunate, especially for those people who've lost their jobs. And it's not a great sign for Firefox all over, I would say.
I don't like being our usual flippant selves when there's real people involved in losing their jobs. So I am sorry about that. I do feel like it has to be a management issue and a foundation issue, that it doesn't have to come to this. And I also feel like unless something changes, there's going to be more news like this. And I feel powerless, but mostly my thoughts go out to the people losing their jobs.
I'm sick, so my care is low at the moment, but of all the things, advocacy was not the job that was getting done very well, was it? Maybe that's a bit harsh.
Well, yeah, maybe it's the pocket team that's gone and we can rejoice.
Oh, we wish.
Well, then maybe they'll have to open source it and we can look after it as a community.
Yeah, maybe. And this isn't the first round of layoffs that they've had in the various Mozilla organizations. Back in February, they laid off a lot of other people. So they really have been slimming down, which arguably is what we've been calling for, isn't it?
Yeah, I think though the only problem is, why are the likes of Mitchell Baker not getting axed when those people who are in charge led the ship in this sort of disaster that's gone forward? And yet it's the normal people who are getting sacked. I mean, yes, this is the way of things, I suppose, but I think they have to carry the can on this one because they were the ones in charge of the entire operation.
Yeah, why don't they cut their salaries, for example?
P45s would be just fine.
For our American listeners, I don't know what the equivalent is.
Pink slip, I think it's called, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
I guess we do want a more focused and perhaps a thinner Mozilla Foundation, but I suspect that the people that they let go are not the people that we would say are the people who should go. They're not the people working on the superfluous or the moon launch ideas that they keep thinking they're having to try and save the foundation itself. Actually, I think advocacy for Mozilla is a very important thing that they should be doing and should be much more effective as.
The messaging about this advocacy stuff has been really confusing because on the one hand, they say that advocacy and global programs are no longer part of our structure, but they also say advocacy is a central tenet of Mozilla Foundation's work and will be embedded in all our other functional areas.
So very on brand then.
Oh God, their words.
Yeah, it's very on brand for them to just management bullshit speak their way out of it.
It's sickening, isn't it, actually?
Yeah.
A central tenet. What bullshit.
Well, have they spoken to the relevant stakeholders? That's what I'm saying. So you're saying that this is not what we wanted, probably. They've probably got rid of the wrong people.
The executives are making millions, like multiple millions, and you should go look on Wikipedia for the various executives and look at how much they've earned when the percentage of usership was tanking. Like, these people should just go. If they had any decency in them, they would go because clearly they aren't doing their job.
Well, the argument always is that tech company leaders earn millions, and so they have to be competitive there. But I feel like you could find someone to do the leadership roles for less because of the importance of Mozilla.
I think you could find a dipping duck could do a better job of doing it.
Anyway,
maybe that's just me.
I think there are four people who would do it who would perhaps just double their current salary, which, you know, wouldn't get anywhere close to also do a much better job. How could we do any worse? Come on. In fact, you could, I'm sure, double or triple or quadruple all of our salaries and still not get close to a single CEO salary. All of us together, I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I feel like the four of us could somehow do a better job than they've been.
Yeah.
Hold my beer.
But the thing is, we're always shitting on Mozilla And I think they deserve it, but I don't like offering some kind of constructive solution or potential. And unfortunately, things like this just kind of take... I haven't got anything positive to say.
I feel like we do always shit on them. You're right. And we do sometimes try and offer constructive criticism. And it's got to the point where it's literally, hire us, we'll do a better job than you. You fucking useless idiots.
And actually, that is us being trying to offer a solution, not us. I mean, I think we would, but almost anyone from the community who understands the domain, understands the challenges, understands what to do with however many hundreds of millions they're still getting from Google. They say laser sharp focus in their blog posts. You know, they haven't got any focus whatsoever. There's thousands of people who could do a better job with laser guided focus.
I don't think it's quite as easy as we'd like to think. Like, simply build a better mousetrap is not going to work here. The real hard stuff comes from convincing people to use Firefox. And to be quite honest, I don't think we'd do a great job of that, because everyone who we could convince with our arguments is already using it. So I don't think it's a straightforward job. However, I do think that they are too unfocused on other things.
I think a lot of people know about privacy and the disaster that all the ad tech companies are. You could play on that for ages, surely.
But I also think that Mozilla gets enough support to build a good browser. I'm sure they could get tens of millions of dollars, and I think that should be enough. And then just be the browser that we want it to be, and just be there. Maybe I'm naive.
Yeah, just be the Mastodon,
yeah,
and let everyone else go and use the Blue Sky / Chrome and be happy. Mm. Like, be a smaller thing and accept being smaller.
Yeah.
Hard to justify your wages as a C-level, though, if they're like 100% of the corporation. Like,
I think that's actually the key to this.
Yeah.
Which is incredibly cynical.
Well, it reminds me of a post-Brexit UK. They need to accept that they are less relevant. Mm. They need to be smaller and don't have a giant empire anymore, aren't part of the EU. I don't know how far I can stretch this, but, like, you know, the UK is this small island nation in the north of Europe, and we need to just accept that. And Mozilla needs to accept that they're not going to beat Chrome. They're going to be this smaller niche thing, and that's fine.
I think so, but also that's a really important role. That really is the central tenet of what the free web means, because they will always be able to hold Chrome and Safari to account by just being the open, visible, open source, open standards pressure on everybody.
But if they were to accept being small and not that relevant, would they still have any influence at all over Chrome and Safari and web standards more generally?
I think that's where their advocacy comes in. But I would say yes, because you can't have a Blink-only world. You know, surely this is something that the anti-monopoly legislators could focus on, and making sure there's kind of representation for other web rendering other than Blink. You know, so Firefox or Mozilla should always have a seat at those tables.
Yeah, but if you've only got a couple of million users versus a billion users, how strong is your voice going to be? That's the argument for Mozilla being this big organization that tries to get a billion users.
Well, I think you have to kind of, it's going to sound like it's elitist, but if you can get all the devs and tech people who obviously do value privacy online to be involved, those are the people that are going to have more influence than just standard users, which is a terrible way to look at it, but it's also realistic.
Yeah, but those people have to join calls and look at web documents and stuff. And if they don't work in Firefox, they're just not going to use it.
Well, why do they not work in Firefox? Because they're avoiding the standards and they're using Chrome-specific standards that aren't really standards.
Yeah, the point being, though, that it's a vicious circle. If not enough people use Firefox, then shit isn't going to work in Firefox and people are not going to use Firefox.
If something equally doesn't hurt, you're not going to fix it either. You need to make it hurt for everybody until they say either fix the standard or make the 15th standard to unify all the standards.
Mm. Well, I think, as usual, we have completely solved the problem for Mozilla. And we will never talk about this again.
I'll expect my check in the post. A large comedic cardboard check.
Okay, this episode is sponsored by Tailscale. Go to tailscale.com/LNL. Tailscale is the easiest way to connect devices and services to each other, wherever they are. Everyone these days has a VPN as a sponsor, but Tailscale isn't like those. This isn't about hiding your browsing habits from coffee shop owners, and it's not about watching Netflix in another country. Tailscale is a proper VPN for connecting your devices securely. It's great for companies, and it's great for self-hosters. Tailscale runs on all the major platforms and is based on WireGuard. It's really easy to set up without opening ports, thanks to NAT traversal. That's one of the reasons loads of the Late Night Linux family hosts use Tailscale. Tailscale lets you give apps, IDEs, subnet routers, and other nodes in your tailnet secure access to any other resource in your network without exposing that resource to the public. Site-to-site networking lets DevOps connect the infrastructure their team relies on to securely transfer data between resources such as web applications and databases. Tailscale's personal plan will always be free, so support the show and try Tailscale out for free today. You'll get up to 100 devices and 3 users for free at tailscale.com/LNL with no credit card required. That's tailscale.com/LNL. All right, this is one to really conflict you, Phelim. Fedora KDE desktop's been promoted to the same tier as GNOME-based Fedora Workstation. So there's been a lot of advocacy from the KDE community to make KDE a proper first-class citizen on Fedora, and it seems like they've finally got their way. So for Fedora 42, the KDE desktop edition is going to be on equal footing as GNOME. So you must be 100% happy about this.
I'm very sick right now, so I may say things I don't mean.
Is this what triggered it?
Yeah. I saw this in the doc last week, and I came down with man flu. It just complete immune system collapse.
Now, this is good, though, isn't it?
It is good. I'm just joking. I just don't like sort of Fedora-based things, but that's not anything to do with it actually being bad. It's just a preference. Yeah, I think this is great. I think the more people realizing that there's better alternatives to GNOME and all those other jigsaw puzzle ones that you guys like. But I think it's cool.
I think it's brilliant. I think it's pretty shocking and almost open source discriminatory that KDE Plasma doesn't become the default on more distributions, considering how positive most people are when they experience it, and it's not. And it's been this way for years, and I understand the historical context, but I think it's a great move. And also, obviously, puts pressure on GNOME and GTK to perhaps change the way that they operate a little bit, perhaps be a little bit more amenable to suggestions. I don't know.
It might even make the whole which distro for KDE you use a bit of more competition as well. And, you know, that's a good thing, too. I just imagine some poor GNOME user goes on there and he tries to set his desktop wallpaper to a picture and then realizes can also choose a color, just a color on its own. Didn't have to go into GIMP, didn't have to make a wallpaper that was one pixel wide and then tile it all across the screen. God, there'll be just cold compressors needed all around the web.
Now, come on, Phelim, you don't need to make an all-black wallpaper in GIMP. You just need to go to the command line and type in the G settings command, and then you can do it. It's fine.
This small 27-letter character hieroglyphics. Yeah, good.
Well, apart from anything else, being a first-class citizen on Fedora means that the Plasma desktop is going to get a lot more knowledgeable eyes on it, a lot more power user eyes on it, developers, sysadmins, the types of people who will report bugs in a positive way and follow up on them and everything. It is exactly the kind of audience that the Plasma desktop and KDE more generally could do with.
Oh, yeah, 100%. Yeah, absolutely. I think I genuinely do think it's good. I mean, I am being somewhat cheeky about it all, but yeah, no, I think it's a really good idea. And you know, some people who might work with a lot of Red Hat servers or whatever, that's the world they live in. I work more in a deb-based system. That's not for me, and that's fine. And I think you're exactly right. That is the right type of user.
Well, speaking of KDE, you've put in this week in Plasma.
I have. So if I was to step back to the day after our recording, because I wasn't going to be a naughty boy like Will and upgrade my machine on the weekend ahead of our recording, And I upgraded the day after and then had effectively 2 days of a very, very broken machine. And I still have a partially wonky broken machine since. And I don't know if it's a combo of the Ubuntu part upgrading from 2204 to 2404 to Neon upgrading at the same time and a few really weird KDE bugs and them all compiling together and it just randomly deciding to uninstall a whole bunch of stuff. And then networking appears to have changed completely. And I had like broken networking. I could go out to websites, no problem. Things couldn't reach my machine, but they could in the Docker that I run on local machine for a couple of things. And oh, it was an absolute mess. So luckily, this week in Plasma has said that they're focused on no features in the past little run, and they're fixing a whole lot of bugs, which is great. And I have to say, I logged bugs and I got them seen to. People were working away on them. It was just, I think I built up all those updates that I've had no issue with for years. And it's like they all compounded all at the same time. It was great crack.
Is this the same installation that started out as Kubuntu and then you just like hacked the sources and side graded to Neon?
Maybe. Some of it. Right. Some of it. Not all of it. It did move on a disk. I didn't manually move it as to a different disk and it's been a different actual motherboard, etc. and all that. So yeah, I mean, yeah, there's .dot files in there from a very long time ago.
Yeah, exactly. I was going to say your .dot directories are like 20 years old at this point.
I've cleaned parts of them out. But the thing is, what actually broke a lot was the actual upgrade script. And I think there was definitely some sort of bug in there because it removed things. Like I didn't have a volume control in KDE when I reloaded it back up. It removed stuff like that. And I had to install that Plasma widget for the volume control. There's loads of weird stuff went on there. So I don't know if QA had a bit of an issue with the Neon upgrade process or what. I'm not sure. But I almost said I welcome a sort of AB rolling distro, KDE distro on. That they said. I know. And then I caught myself and I stopped. But then I got sick. So, well, did that contribute? Maybe.
Well, if you'd had a composable immutable desktop failing, then you could have just rolled back.
Yeah, could have. I could have also returned from backups as well, but I wasn't going to try that either.
Yeah, but, you know, restoring from backups would have taken ages, whereas you could have just rebased or whatever they call it in seconds.
I should have just reinstalled is what I should have done. It would have been quicker and I would have got there faster, but I wouldn't have learned anything. Or not that I actually learned anything either, but at least I made some bug reports.
Potentially related to that, I've been having some weird network problems on my 2404 machine over the weekend. Suddenly, I couldn't ping one of the devices on my network, or I could, but it would it was losing like 60% of the packets or something like that. And I think I've tracked it down to being plugged into Ethernet and on Wi-Fi at the same time. My IP routes don't have a local network route in there. They say like next hop via the router, but there's no IP route for the subnet of my own network. And when I added that in, stuff started working again. So I haven't tracked down what is causing that, but maybe this is an Ubuntu thing.
I think it is an Ubuntu thing. Now, I don't have anything but the actual interface, but what I do have is a network bridge because when I'm using virtual machines, I want them to have their own IP address on the network. And that was causing all manner of problems. And I had to load it up, drop the whole firewall, then restart Docker, then bring back the firewall, and then things started to work, but I didn't get there straight away. So it was a lot of, why is this all working but not working? It was really messed up. And I think it might be something to do with NF tables as well, because there was a transition to that, I think. I mean, you might have IP tables installed, but it might not really be IP tables. I think it's a shim that makes it look like it is. So yeah, it's a real mess and very painful as well. It scared me off doing any servers I was planning on doing. Because they're probably going to inherit the same network config, because I think it's at a lower layer. So yeah, it's not great. Other thing I did want to mention, though, was KDE is doing a finance run for this, and there's a link in Nate's article about adopting an app, if you can spend €50 or more on an app, you will get a mention in the notes and stuff. And yeah, anybody who can donate anything, and there's work there to be done too. Loads of stuff, and they're trying to get their drive up to €30,000 this year, which would be great. Especially when Noam gets £1 million and then has problems, and they're only looking for €30,000. I think people should throw €50 or whatever they can afford in.
Okay, this episode is sponsored by 1Password. Imagine your company's security like the quad of a college campus. There are nice brick paths between the buildings. Those are company-owned devices, IT-approved apps, and managed employee identities. And then there are the paths people actually use, the shortcuts worn through the grass that are the actual straightest line from point A to B. Those are unmanaged devices, shadow IT apps, and non-employee identities like contractors. Most security tools only work on those happy brick paths, but a lot of security problems take place on the shortcuts. 1Password Extended Access Management is the first security solution that brings all these unmanaged devices, apps, and identities under your control. It ensures that every user credential is strong and protected, every device is known and healthy, and every app is visible. 1Password Extended Access Management solves the problems traditional IAM and MDM can't touch. It's security for the way we work today, and it's now generally available to companies with Okta and Microsoft Entra, and in beta for Google Workspace customers. So support the show and check it out at 1Password.com/LateNightLinux. That's 1Password.com/LateNightLinux. On to a bit of admin then. First of all, thank you everyone who supports us with PayPal and Patreon. We really do appreciate that. If you want to join those people, you can go to LateNightLinux.com/support. And remember that for various amounts on Patreon, you can get an advert-free RSS feed of either just this show or all the shows in the Late Night Linux family. And you even get some episodes early. And if you want to get in contact, you can email show@latenightlinux.com. I have been having Wi-Fi woes. I must have talked about this before on this show, I think. I've definitely talked about it on 2.5 admins. So I've got TP-Link EAP225 ceiling-mounted access points.
Oh, you made a mistake. Listen to Jim. That's what you did there.
Yes, apparently I did. Now, they work perfectly with my Pixel and all my Linux laptops. It's great. I get like, if I'm close to the access point, like 600-800 megabit a second. However, I've had an ongoing problem with Apple devices. Now, I only have the M1 MacBook Air and like 8th generation iPad, just the base model, one of them. And what happens with the Apple devices is I connect to the access point, I watch a video like YouTube or whatever, and then it just stops playing. And it looks like it's still connected. It thinks it's still connected, but there's just no network connection. And then anything from a few seconds to a couple of minutes later, the connection just starts working again, no problem. Now, I thought that I had narrowed this down to MAC address randomization, which is what Apple devices do. And so I thought that by turning that off, I had fixed the problem, but I just hadn't really been using my Apple devices much. I then set up the same system for someone else fairly close to me, and they haven't moved in yet, so I'm just kind of testing it for them and whatnot. And I thought I'd better just test on mine whether this Apple issue really was fixed by the MAC address randomization. And sure enough, it fucking wasn't. And so I have no idea what I've done wrong. And I spent the best part of a day installing the controller software on a Raspberry Pi and tweaking various settings and everything, and just nothing would work. And then I thought, right, well, let me just go and just establish that in that other place, I do actually have the same problem with the Apple devices. And so far, no. It works absolutely perfectly. Roaming between access points for, you know, an hour of testing, I was just watching the news or whatever on the iPad and the Mac, again, no problem. So then I thought, right, well, what is different? Okay, well, the firmware was slightly older in this new place, so let me downgrade the firmware. Did that, nothing. Set it up to be exactly the same. The only thing that's different is the SSID and password, and I cannot think that that would be the cause of it. So I don't suppose any of you are going to help me here. This is more a question to the audience. What have I done wrong? The only thing I can think of is either I've got a dodgy access point, too much interference, like Wi-Fi traffic from neighbors here versus there, Or could it be the connections to the access points? Now, when I did mine, I wasn't as experienced at doing the punch down and everything, but it works perfectly with my Linux and Android devices, so I don't think it would be that. So what am I missing here?
I don't know, but it sounds like a faulty device is likely. How many access points have you got at home?
4. And what I did was unplugged them all, plugged one in, had the problem. Plugged another one in, had the problem. I went through it methodically, and I had the problem with all of the access points.
But it's only the Mac having the problem.
The Mac and the iPad.
Yeah, so there you go. There's your problem.
Well, yeah. But why is it not a problem with exact same hardware, exact same settings in another house?
Here's an idea for you. Try and install a VPN client on the Apple devices and see if it exists when the VPN is on. Because I wonder if the Apple devices are doing some, I don't know, IPv6 DNS fuckery that nobody else is doing. And by sticking a VPN on, you could perhaps eliminate those. I think that's worth trying.
But that doesn't make sense because with the same exact access points in a different house, it's fine. So I don't need the VPN in the other house. So why would it be a problem here?
Oh, clearly it's built on top of a graveyard then. That's the obvious answer, I think.
Cosmic rays.
It is starting to feel like some sort of supernatural situation. And the thing is, I don't really mind not being able to use my iPad and Mac, to be honest, because it works most of the time. I just can't really stream video. But I'm worried that these other people who I've set it up for, who are fully all in on iPhones and iPads, are going to have this problem and I won't know how to fix it. I feel like if I find the fix for mine, then I'll be forearmed for fixing theirs if the problem does crop up.
The thing is, though, you've probably got other devices on that network that they will not have. Like, you could find it's something to do with your NAS doing something and they're like trying to hog the same IP or being obnoxious to each other. I don't know.
So you're saying disconnect all of the devices that are on my LAN. That's not a bad shout, actually, yeah.
Like, fully replicate it to the same extent, like, as best you can.
I wonder if it's worth changing my SSIDs and passwords as well, just to see if it's that.
Stranger things have happened.
Are you running Pi-hole at home?
No.
Ah, oh, darn it.
No, I'm not. And it's the exact same iPad. You know, it's not like it's not like it's their iPad. I'm taking my iPad into their house, works perfectly, bring it home, have the dropping out problem.
Presumably you already Googled this. Did you find anybody with a similar problem?
Yes, some people, and I've tried everything in Reddit threads and in various support forums and everything. Yeah, I've tried all of the obvious stuff from Googling it. So yeah, show at latenightlinux.com. Last time I asked about this, I got a lot of suggestions, and I'm sure I'll get a lot more this time. Right, well, we better get out of here then. We'll be back next week when, who knows what it'll be, discoveries and stuff probably. But until then, I've been Joe.
I've been Phelan.
I've been Graham.
And I've been Will.
See you later.